गुरुदेवाय देवे मातृक्ष मंगलम मंगलम भक्ताब्रिंदेभ्यो सर्वलोकाय मंगलम ओम स्थापकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्म स्वरूपिणे अवतार वरिष्ठाय रामकृष्णाय मंगलम ओम सदाशिव समारंभम शंकराचार्य मध्यमम अस्मरचार प्रायंतम वंदे गुरुम परंपरा गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरु विष्णु गुरुदेव महेश्वर गुरुरेव परम ब्राह्मण तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। गणेश शारद गुरु भ्यो नमः। हरि ओम श्री हरि। जय मां जय मां। So we're continuing, almost finished. I was thinking maybe we'd finish after 26 volumes or something of our talks. It's a lot of hours of discussion on puja. But I'm not sure if we'll, I think we'll maybe get through the core of the puja today, and then maybe next time, Makalani, and maybe next week, if we meet next week, kind of close, maybe arati and homa, and I mean in a general way, not we can spend another 9 months on the homa. We'll do that, you know, like general, like maybe some closing things about the nature of ritual and things like that, you know, maybe. But what did we finish last time? We finished Kali Puja. We did. We offered after all this. After we could say after months and months and months of puja, or after 40 minutes of puja, depends on how you're doing it. We finally did the 16, 5, 10, 16, 32 type offerings to Ma. Can you get the principle of the Tantra volume 2, the one I wasn't? There's maybe something in there that may be useful, perhaps. And I think where I ended up last time, I mentioned that then when you worship Ma, then her consort gets worshipped, right? And so generally, sometimes you worship the divine couple when you think of them like that together. You know, you can, like for instance, you do Etaganda Pushpe, Shrin Kleem Radha Krishna Abhyam Namaha, Sitarama Abhyam Namaha, Lakshmi Narayana Abhyam Namaha, Gauri Shankaraya Namaha. Right, that's one way of doing it, is worshiping this way. And but here, when you're worshiping, like if you're doing like Krishna puja, then after you worship Krishna, then you also worship Radha. If you're doing Ram puja, you also worship Sita. If you're doing Sita puja, you also worship Rama. Works that way, right? So if you worship, so generally, you can do it the same number of offerings. But I mentioned last week that if you do a 16 item worship for Kali, then you'd worship her consort Mahakal. Was 10 items, right? You can do 16 notes, but generally you do a little, the one less. If you do 10 items for Kali, you do 5 items for Mahakala. If you do 5 items, like the little book, this is a 5-item puja, and then there's simply an offering of flower to Mahakaleshwara. And then they're fed together, I think. they eat together, you know. So it's complicated because it's not, you know, like, oh, the consort, Kali is consort, right? So you consort, what's the definition? I don't even know there's a legal definition of, I guess in modern language it would be his wife or husband, you know, that the spouse, right? But consort is a larger, grander, more sophisticated definition. That's why sometimes we don't use, we really don't say that Holy Mother is Sri Ramakrishna's wife. Although it's his wife, but we use the language, the same word. We use the language to say, oh, it's just the divine consort is Ramakrishna, right? Because they didn't have a normal wedding. Also, I mean, they didn't have a normal marriage, right? But we usually use that language, you know. Actually, sweet scene, because I had bought a picture the Holy Trinity, our divine trio as the Ramakrishna mission, the Sri Ramakrishna Holy Mother Vivekananda, on a, you know. Like the one that's above my duni, you know, my lakutir there, maybe the same one. And I bought it at the Ramakrishna Mission in Allahabad at the camp, and then we put it near the shrine at our ashram in Allahabad. And there's a lot of new little kids, you know, they're all young, our kids that live at the ashram. So not everybody, they're not growing up in the Ramakrishna Mission, you know, so they know Ramakrishna, he's famous, and there's a big picture of him, there's a picture of him in the ashram, Vivekananda. But Holy Mother, this one kid had never seen. And he saw Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, but then he asked, "Who's that?" right? He's not, you know, he's from a poor family. You know, he's never been exposed, you know. And I was trying to say, oh, in some sort of, I don't know if I was saying or Ambikananda was saying, in some broken Hindi, trying to explain, oh, that this is, you know, Ramakrishna, to him he knew, is that, oh, this is his wife, his, I don't know what the word he used, tri or something like, there's some word like that, right? And another little kid named Gitanand, a longer little kid, right? He was a little kid, he maybe met 9 or 10, and he goes like, wife, nahi, not wife, right? Bhagavan and Bhagavati. He pointed, this is God and goddess. Like, that was his version of divine consort, you know, like, this is not the normal thing. I was like, oh, this little kid, you know, they know more, you know. We're trying to explain in a way that doesn't not make not sounding too fanatical or something, but no, you got very upset. Cut us right, shut us right up. Bhagavan, Bhagavati. Okay. So in the Shakta tradition, especially in the Kali tradition, right, to say Kali is Shiva's wife is a strange thing to say, or even her consort is a strange thing to say, right? Because we were talking about this a few days ago, that with some guests we had here, that like in the, we've talked about this also in our talks on the Chandi, that the Shakti, like Varahi and Narasinghi, remember the Ashtamatrikas, or the Matrikas, Varahi, Aindri, Kumari, Narasinghi, Varahi, Vaishnavi, Maheshwari, these are the form of Chinama. They're usually, oh, look who's here. They're usually seen, I mean, you can see them, oh, this is the consort of Vishnu, the consort of Narasingha, the consort of Indra, right? But it's a big point, actually they're not their consort, they're their Shakti, right? And so one of the themes is that Devi is not anyone's consort, right? She's a Shakti of all. She's the very essence of the energetic and the reality behind it, the energy and the reality, ontological reality behind the deity, right? So Kali is not the wife of Shiva, you know, like we, when we think of like Gauri and Shankar, Shiva has a wife. Shiva's wife is Parvati, right? You know, that, in that way of thinking about it. But when you think of Kali, the perspective of the Shakti is so great that normal way of thinking of that way of dualistic thinking falls apart, you know, transcended. But what, so Sri Ramakrishna, I was looking for this verse and I couldn't find it, but Sri Ramakrishna, in the Katambrita, there's a scene. Sri Ramakrishna is on the steamship with Keshav Chandrasen, that famous steamship scene, and so Keshav asks Sri Ramakrishna, so how many ways does Kali play? He asked her about Kali specifically, and we've quoted these things. He says, oh, he plays in many ways. And he mentions his Dakshina Kali and Shama Kali and Rakta Kali and Vama Kali. All the, when we were talking about the Dakshina Kali Dhyan Mantra, we talked about them. But then he says, it's Maha Kali. It's Maha Kali, she is united with Mahakala. Right? Just a mysterious like that. I wish I had the verse, but it's very, very cosmic. He says, before there was anything, before there was even time and space, before there was is, before there was, you know, before there was a was, you know, only there was Mahakala in union with Mahakali, right? So then that gets a little, now we're getting a little bit philosophical, not, you know, so what's Mahakala? That's very hard to describe who Mahakala is. Mahakala, one definition of Mahakala is the great time. Kala means time, right? Mahakala also, that is, also could be the great death, right? Mahakala. Because time, death is the killer of us all. So from, often the term for time and death are the same. But she's like the great, I don't know, it's very hard to explain, you know, it's hard to even think about. But Mahakala, the great reservoir of time, of potentiality, of reality. And Mahakali, right, is, it's, that's energy, that's potential, you know, that, and she's, and before there was anything, before time and space, right? And there's only one being, Mahakala, in union with, the thing is, only one being, Mahakala in union with Mahakali. They're not two beings, right? And that's the whole idea of that Shiva and Shakti, that within the one being, within the existence of the one being, there's also the potential, the energetic potential. And we've used this example before from Swami Chidananda Saraswati, the Abundant Life Society, he says that if you, you imagine somebody sitting and meditating, quietly sitting, mind still, and you say, hey, Peter, come, dinner's ready, and you jump, and Peter, who's meditating, jumps up and runs, right? Although he was perfectly still, when somebody called, immediately he jumped up, the potential to get up and jump was there even when he wasn't moving. So before there was anything, there's only Peter, right? In union with, and his Shakti is in union with his own being, right? The being, existence and energy are the same at that level, you know? So that is that philosophy of Mahakala and Mahakali, the great time, the great existence, the great reality, and the great potential for that reality to manifest, right, is shown in this iconography of Kali on top of Shiva, standing on top of Shiva. So that form of that Kali stands on, that we call that Mahakala Bhairava, right? And so Bhairava, so it's difficult, Bhairava means fierce. Bhairavi is a fierce goddess, Bhairava is a fierce lord. Because also time is fierce, mm-hmm. Death is fierce, feared by everybody, right? So, and in the Puranic story, in the Tantric Puranic story, in the Shakta Puranic stories, the Bhairava is often seen as a protective deity. Like we have, actually, if you look where, if you follow Ma's eye through the back window, through the outside kitchen, through the outside window, there's a little shrine, she can look right into his eyes. Right, they call it Chitrapal Bhairava, and that's a form that sits on a dog, and he holds a club. He's the policeman, the guard of a temple. Every temple has guardian deities, but Shiva temples always have a Bhairava, and Shakti temples always have a Bhairava protecting. Right, and it's said that in stories when the Shakti Pitams were created, when Ma's body and was cut up. In that ancient story of the 54 Shakti Pitams, Lord himself sent an aspect of himself to protect it, and as a Bhairava. So it's Shiva, but it's an aspect of Shiva. Shiva's anger, almost, or Shiva's protective nature, a fierceness of Shiva's fierceness, right? Chitrapal Bhairava. And he's also, very often you'll see him with a mustache. Now we're in Bengal, that's the thing, and we're not used to seeing Shiva with a mustache. And even I have the little small Kali, we have the Utsav Murti, next to Sri Ramakrishna statue, the small Kali that we use for bathing the main deity. Right, that was the first Kali that was here before Big Ma came, you know. And I had, and it was just brass at one time, and then Chaitanya Bhagavat painted her many, many years ago. But he has a mustache. And I don't like Shiva with a mustache. You know, so I had him like, well, paint it white, so he doesn't show. Even now, you don't see, I don't think his mustache is there. Maybe Jai Pradhan Singh has repainted him. I don't know if he included the mustache or not. If he did, I won't look at him. You know, I don't like the mustache on Shiva. Right? But actually, in Bengal, Shiva always has a mustache. It shows he's married. Right? That means he's not a young man. He's not a young boy anymore. So when Shiva has a mustache, and usually in Bengal also, you'll see Mahakala in Dakshinishwar, right? Mahakala has a huge stomach, right? Bigger than my stomach, like Ganesh type stomach. You know, it's like he's, because that also shows he's married, right? It shows he's in union, right? A married Shiva eats well. The super thin Shiva, these are the ascetics. But no, I'm not even interested in Parvati or anything like that, you know? Close, ignore everything. And, yeah. But so, mustache and the large stomach is like a symbol of that. Right, but another thing I remember, one tantric was telling me, I was talking to him, he said, oh, you need a Bhairava to protect the temple, right? And he said, he has to have a mustache. Right, he says, otherwise, how you know, in India, police officers have mustaches. Right, if without the mustaches, no police officer. You think even here, I think mostly, maybe it's changing now, but that used to be like the stereotypical rupa, the uniform of police officer. But otherwise, you won't know that you're supposed to be scared of him, you know? And usually he guards a door or he looks, generally Chitrapalava looks towards the north, towards the south. Because the south is Yama's direction of death, right? So he looks and he keeps death, him looking that way, death won't come near. Mahakala also means the lord of death, he controls death, not only death. But because of positioning we wanted him. He's looking at the door and he's looking at Ma, so he's not looking south here, but here. So that's Chetra Pal Bhairava. There's another form of Bhairava called Batuk Bhairava. Batuk Bhairava is like a, maybe you've seen picture, you see posters of him sometimes. He looks like a little baby. It's like a fierce Shiva little baby. And there's many stories of to justify that form. There's one story that when Kali is in the stories is often when she manifests wildly, right? She's like, you know, and so when some cause of a demon's misbehavior elicits Kali's the response of the Divine Mother as Kali in the stories, she appears very fierce, and once fierceness is awakened, it's not easy to calm it down. Once you light a if you light a fire, it's hard to put out a fire. It's easy to light one, hard to put it. It's actually hard to light a fire, but even harder to put it out. The better way of saying it, right? And so there's many things when that happens. Shiva tries to control her. This gets into all kinds of gendered issues, but we're not. This is, in general, we're talking like this. And you know, some descriptions of this form of Kali stand on top of Shiva is that when that happened, Shiva laid down at her feet, and she stepped on him and saw, oh, this is a common story in Bengal, oh, I've stepped on my husband. Of course, she's not her husband, but she sticks out her tongue and stops, and so the fighting stops, or her destructive Shakti stops. So in another story, Shiva tried to do that again. Last time this happened, I laid down, and then she stepped on me, and she said, oh my God, I've stepped on Shiva, and she stopped. So I'll do that again. And so she lay down. And this time she's about to step and she realizes, oh, no, that's Shiva. Right? I know what he's trying to do. And she's not finished being angry. You know, sometimes when you're angry, you don't want to be, you know, it's like, oh, if I talk to that person, he's going to calm me down. I'm not ready to be calmed down. You know, so she goes around him. Right? That didn't work. So now she what to do. So he comes up to another plan and becomes a little baby. And in the middle of this battlefield, his dead bodies, the whole thing, little crying Shiva. And seeing that her maternal instinct, so you can see these are all ways of if we analyze the story, the way of domesticating the uncontrollable Kali. The first as a dutiful wife, now as a loving, maturing, nurturing mother. You can see, but so this is a different tricks of Bhairava, I guess. And she sees, and oh my goodness, and she picks him up, and he's crying, cold, alone, in this battlefield. So she picks him up and suckles him like that. That's Batuk Bhairava. There's another form of Bhairava called Bhikshatanamurti. That's which I have in my kutir. He's a form of Shiva that appears as a beggar, as a wild, naked beggar. And there's two, three stories concerned with him. But in one of the main stories, there was a group of yogis, of pundits, not yogis, but him that married sages that had gone in, Shiva devotees also, that had gone into the forest for tapasya, to do rituals, right? But they got lost in the rituals, right? And just the technology of the rituals. You do this ritual, you get this result, right? And when you get lost in rituals, in the technical side of it, and then your bhakti shrivels up, right? And so their hearts began to get dry as they get too much into the technology of the day, and their wives began to suffer because of the dryness of their husbands, right? So Shiva, and they're praying to Lord Shiva to help them, right, to solve this situation. And so Shiva shows up one day as a naked beggar, right? And they get very, and he's described as extremely beautiful, extremely handsome, like this. So there's a long, there's not the occasion to tell this story specifically, but he upsets the pundits in the forest, and they say, well, okay, we know rituals, let's get rid of him. He's exciting our wives. He's naked. He's dirty, right? He's exact opposite of our Vedic rituals, right? He represents the exact opposite of what we're trying to do here. So it's okay, we'll show him. And they swaha, they start creating, and the first thing they pull out a little demon. He says, kill him, right? They pulled out a monster out of the fire. And so Shiva grabs them and shoves them down and steps on them. And you see the dancing form of Nataraj we have outside. He stands on a little, there's a little dwarfy character. I forget, he has a name, I'm forgetting his name, but that's that. This is that scene, actually. Mm-hmm. This is that dancing Shiva's commentary on this form of Bhairava. Right, then it's like, well, that didn't work, right? So they pull out a tiger and throw it at him out of the fire, right? And so he takes his trishul and guts it and skins the tiger. He says, "You think I'm naked? No problem, I'll wear this." And he ties it around his waist. So they throw an elephant at him. "Ah, you think I'm not dressed properly?" So he skins the elephant, he uses it as an upper cloth. Then they throw snakes at him, right? And he says, "Ah, you guys are good Brahmins, I'm a wild boy from the forest." So he takes a snake and ties it. These are all very symbolic things also, right? We're not going fully into it. So his Brahmin thread is made of snakes like this, right? And so finally they realize what they have done and everything is rectified. But this form of the naked beggar showing up wild and unexpected and unappreciated, you know, challenging and breaking social norms, religious norms, is called Bhikshatana Murti. Then there's the Ashtabhairavas. These are all interesting. The Ashtabhairavas. So we mentioned the Ashta Matrikas, who are Narasinghi, Varahi, Vaishnavi. So all these different forms. And so Narasinghi is not the consort of Narasingha, right? The man lion, right? It's the Shakti of Narasingha, right? So it's a different thing, right? It's the fierceness of Narasingadev. Right, is Narasingha, Narasinghi. Narasingha's consort is Lakshmi, not in that story, right? So Narasinghi is not Lakshmi. It's Narasingha's real essence. She's the essence of everything, the Shakti behind everything, right? So Narasinghi's consort, if she has a consort, I'll tell you, let's see, is called Samhara Bhairava. The all-destroying form of Bhairava, right? So each of these forms, each of the matrikas of these, this is Brahmi, Maheshwari, Kumari, Vaishnavi, Varahi, Chamunda, Indrani, and Narasinghi. These are the Ashta Bhairavas. Each one, their consort, if they have a consort, is a form of Bhairava, right? And these are Ashitanga Bhairava, Ruru, which means dark-limbed, Ruru Bhairava, which means teacher, Chanda Bhairava means fierce, Krodha Bhairava means angry, Unmata Bhairava means intoxicated, Kapala Bhairava means he holding a skull, Bhishana Bhairava means terrible, and Samhara Bhairava means all annihilating. Right. So once again, these fierce forms of Shiva, right? But they're the consort. But in the Chandi, when who are the Bhairava, who are the Ashtamatikas fighting? Shumba, Nishumba, I think, right at that point. I think so. When Nishumba has been killed, and Shumba challenges, he says, it's not fair. You're fighting with all these goddesses helping you, and I'm alone on the battle. Of course, he came with billions and millions and kotis of soldiers that she destroyed. But she challenges, oh, all these different forms, you're not fighting fair. Right, she's, oh, just like, I'm the only one here. This is everyone's, where is there anybody else? And all the different matrikas, they all get absorbed back into the Devi. Right, so they're all one Devi. Right, so it means all of them, their consorts are only one Bhairava. But when they're seen as separate, Varahi, Narasinghi, Indri, they have a separate Bhairava, you could say. And they're also, the Ashta Bhairavas, the eight Bhairavas, are also associated with the directions. They're protective deities also. Yeah, so a point. Ashitanga Bhairava, Ruru Bhairava, Chanda Bhairava, Krodha Bhairava, Unmata Bhairava, Kapala Bhairava, Bhishara Bhairava, Samhara Bhairava. These are the eight directions, right? And they're meditated on in union with their Shaktis. So just like Mala's in union with Shiva, so they're also in union with their particular Shaktis. Brahmi, Maheshwari, Kamuri, Vaishnavi, Varahi, Chamunda, Indrani, and Narasinghi. And each one has a dhyan mantra, just like we've talked about these dhyan mantras, that describes their form. Each one's a little different. Each of their mantras are different. Their mula mantras, pranam mantras, and dhyan mantras. But each of the dhyan mantras have some shared, they all say, there's one line that's in each one of them. Trinetram varadam shantam kumaran cha digambarim. With three eyes, granting blessings, peaceful, even though they're described as destroying the world, they're also seen as peaceful. Because Shiva is both peaceful and fierce, right? Useful and naked, Digambara. So this is also quality. All the, usually Bhairava is always seen as a naked deity, right? Because it's like Kali is also, we dress them, right? Out of affection, out of tradition, and also feeling like the mother and the goddess and the queen, like this is the way it's worshipped in temples. But her Dhyan mantra, Digambari Mahish, you know, it all has, we've talked about this already, what that means, that she's unbound and uncontrollable, infinite, all-pervading, like this. So Bhairava is the same, is always seen as unbounded. And there's a hymn by Adi Shankara, attributed to Adi Shankara, Kashi. There's the famous Bhairava in Kashi, Kashi Vishwan, attached to there's eight verses attributed to Shankara about that the Bhairava in Kashi, very beautiful. And but the one of the lines, it uses the term nirvana, right? So it's interesting, nirvana, we know what nirvana means. In Buddhism, we have this idea of nirvana. And Hinduism, we have the idea of nirvana, means without bondage, liberation. Gita uses Brahma nirvana, the Bhagavad Gita. But nirvana also means naked, because without bonds, uncovered, unlimited. Because the nakedness of Shiva or Bhairava, it means unlimited, you know. So even nirvana has that meaning in these in this mantra. So these are all different forms of Bhairava. And then, so the form here worshipped is, we call Mahakala Bhairava, right? Shava Rupa Mahadevo Hridayo Parisamstitam. This is a verse we in the Kali Dhyan Mantra we discussed, right? She stands or sits upon the heart of Mahadeva, who lies like a corpse, right? We've given lots of talks here, and we've out in the Duni on the Thousand Names of Kali discussions. We've talked about the symbolism of that and what that means. But she's seen usually in a temple form, she's seen standing on Shiva. That's the most common form, right? As per the Dhyan mantra, it's a little more complicated. Actually, there's two Shivas. She's in union, sexual union with Shiva, right? And then underneath that, there's another Shiva called Shava Shiva or Sada Shiva. Right, and so we can't go into that. We can, but we won't go into that because we've discussed this for several hours already. We have recordings of these talks with what this means. But the simple thing we could think as a tantric yogic interpretation that which we discussed before, if you think of the normal abode of Kali is at the base of the spine as Kundalini in the yogic interpretation, esoteric yogic interpretation, and Shiva lives on Mount Kailash on the top of the head, right, and when Kundalini awakens and is in union with Shiva, Ma is on top, right? So Shiva, Ma is in union with Shiva, right? Which is Supreme Consciousness, Mahakala. And on what are they sitting on? They're sitting on another Shiva called Shava. It means corpse. Sada Shiva or Shava Shiva, which is this body. So this body is also the corpse. This is the Shavasana, the corpse on which Ma sits. Is this body itself. So this is an image of the awakened consciousness of a yogi, right? So that's part of the way we can interpret it. So in a temple, usually there the two Shivas aren't drawn, only one Shiva is carved. But in some paintings you maybe have seen where there's like two Shivas, a Shiva on top of a Shiva. Here it's a show, a Shiva on top of a Shiva. Haile Goswami's painting, he did it based on the Dhyan Mantra, Shiva on top of a Shiva. And surrounded, and the whole thing's on top of a 1,000-petal lotus. Right, because I mean the whole thing, that whole reality is here. Right. Everybody here says, to a yogi, this represents a union of the individual soul with the divine, the truly awakened Kundalini, and our corresponding fully awakened consciousness. So, I have a fault here, is I don't have, so in all this types of pujas, all the stages of the puja, we do a Dhyan mantra, then we hold a flower in Kurma Mudra, we chant a Dhyan Mantra, and then we do a 5-item or 10-item worship, and then we do Pranam Mantra. And over the so many years, somehow or another, in our puja, right, the Dhyan Mantra is not there. And I have it, I just have to find it. It's not in the normal book, right? And I think partially because it's a very awesome mantra. and it's very gory. It's very if Kali is her image is gothic, I guess you could say in that style, right? Mahakala is up another notch, right? And but when we first had it, we didn't have a translation. This is like 25 years ago, right? You know, and we didn't chant things. We didn't know what they mean, right? And so another, and as our puja books got reprinted and reprinted on ourselves and like that, it's and some another got left out or got purposely left out or accidentally left out. So we need to add it again. And we're actually. Rishi is the one who has to add. You need to add the Bhairava Dhyan Mantra. Okay. He's the guy. He's going. You have to find the Bhairava Dhyan Mantra. Right. I have a copy of it. I just have to retrans. We have to translate it. But it's sufficiently fierce. We'll just say that. But then, so ideally, meditating on Mahakali Shuddha, Mahakala Bhairava, then offering the flower. And then we do the five item worship, and his mula mantra is super cool. If you like what we call cool secret tantric mantras, this is one of those cool secret tantric mantras, right? If you, I like cool secret tantric mantras. I think most people here also in that category are like, this is a really cool one, and it has all kinds of actually, the line of Bija mantras is very interesting, right? We can't go into it, but there a lot of them have to do are dealing with the elements. So Mahakala is the embodiment of all the elements, or each of the elements dealing with a chakra. So it's Shiva moving up. I mean, as Shakti moves through the chakra, it goes up the elements and things like that. So the first and the main Bija mantras is Hum. We've talked about this Hum. It's a very fierce, fiery mantra, right? So when Shiva opens his eyes and burns Kamadev, goes Hum, and burns him to ash, right? Kali in or Devi in the Chandi, millions and millions of demons attack, and she goes Hum, and they get burned to ash. So it's a very fiery mantra, right? So it starts as Om Hum and Shraum. Shraum is a mantra that each syllable has some meaning, but it's connected also to Nishingadev. It's a if you analyze the syllable, it has to do with his teeth and his fangs. You know, it's like this, like rah, you know, that. It's the roar of it's a roaring type of sound. It's a very super. Remember, Bhairava means fierce, right? So Om Hum Shram, and then a series of mantras that deal with the elements. Om Hum Shram Yang Rang Lang Bang Ang Krom Mahaka, and then Mahakala Bhairava. Oh Mahakala Bhairava, O Lord. The great Lord of Time, Bhairava, Sarva Vignan, all obstacles. You know, like Narada Ganesh is Vigneshwara, the Lord of obstacles. Right? So the same word. Sarva Vignam, all obstacles. Nashaya. Destroy. Rip apart. It's like, you know, so it's the mantra is he's even in his seemingly passive form here, this lying in blissful consciousness, non dual reality. As Maud manifests his manifestation, or still, he's invoked also as a powerful energy to protect us and to help, you know, to clear the way. Sarva vigna nashaya, with destroy all obstacles, and then another series of bija mantras. Krim Shrim Hum Pat Swaha. And then we do the offering, Etaganda Pushpe, Eshaganda for flower, for perfume, Eshaganda. Where is it? The second one is Yidam Satana Pushpam, flower, sandalwood paste, Eshadupa, incense, Eshadipa, lamp, Mahanaividyam for sweets, for food. Like, we've already gone through these things, right? But here we split the mantra. So we do that Om Hung Shang Yang Om Om Hung Shang Yang Rang Lang Wang Shang. Om Hung Shang Yang Rang Lang Wang Ang Krong Mahakala Bhairava Sarvigna Nashaya Hring Shring Hung Pat Swaha. Then the name of the offering, Itagana Pushpe. Right? And then Om Mahakala Bhairavaya Shivaya Namaha. Then again with this offering we worship Om Mahakala Bhairava Shiva. Right, again mentioning his name. So that's very, and if you hear it, it's actually very, it's very lovely. very fierce sounding, but it's actually so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful mantras, I think, like we chant in the fire ceremony. You also hear after we do the Mal's mantra, we do that 11 times, or 8 times for the Ashtabhairavas, or 11 times for the for Shiva. Is 11 the number for Shiva, or 25 times, depends how much time we have, right? Om Hum Shiva, yeah. And then there's the Pranam mantra, which we don't have here, my fault, or Rishi's fault for not finding it, against not knowing you were supposed to find it. The Pranam mantra for Bhairava. And then sometimes in very elaborate pujas, a separate puja is done for the Shiva that's underneath Mahakala, for Shava Shiva, right? And I think the mantra, I have to remember, Shava Shiva Mahapreta Padmasanaya Namaha. Right, this is a very nice. Sadashiva, that supreme pure Shiva, Sadashiva Mahapreta, the great corpse, right? Padmasanaya Namaha, in the lotus seat. Right, so Ma's lotus seat is, you know, and actually, when we sit, also, we're also sitting on the same Shiva. The lotus, actually, the Ma's lotus seat is not the base of the spine, not in the heart like we meditate upon. Ma's lotus seat is not the thousand-petaled head. This is where her union with Shiva is, right? So her lotus seat, and underneath the lotus seat is this body, or this world, this dead world compared to her. Sadashiva Mahapreta Padmasanaya Namaha, back when I remembered, right? And so that a whole puja can be done to that that form also. In big pujas, we at least offer a flower to that form of Shava Shiva. So I've actually heard with a little bit of controversy, not controversy, but some discussion with some swamis that, this is not Mahakala, it's Sadashiva. Right. Now, I think my view, and I've investigated this with some experts, actually, you know, Sadashiva, here Sadashiva and Mahakalishvara are the same deity. They're worshipped the same, right? But if you paint them separately, you worship one and you worship the other. So it's a little different. So that is, in one sense, the puja. Now there's some closing things we do, right? Here, we do a bunch of stuff. Oh, we didn't do the food offering. I take it all back. Yeah. We're not even near done. Sorry. Another 5 lectures. So we worshiped Ma Kali, and we worshiped Mahakalishvara with the 5 items, including sweets and like that. Actually, we worshiped Ganesh, Guru Ganesha, Surya, Narayan, Shiva, Durga, Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Vivekananda, Baneshwar Shiva, right? Kali and Mahakala. Was all these items, including, you see, during big pujas, we have, each one has a little plate of food and water, separate plates. For daily use, sometimes we offer a pinch of rice for each one of them, as a spoonful of water, right? But now her main offering should be done. So her main, for daily, we offer a larger plate of sweets and nuts and preparing, or cooked food, right, on amavasyas and special occasions. Any holiday, or especially amavasyas, we always offer cooked food, rice and other things. I think last week or 2 weeks ago we talked about rice, about some restrictions on rice. There's another restriction with rice, is that once you start offering rice to the deity, you have to offer daily rice to the deity. Right? Unless your standard is to offer it only occasionally. If that's like your thing, like we only offer cooked rice, cooked food on amavasya, right, then every amavasya you should offer cooked food. If you offer cooked food every day, you have to offer cooked food every day, right? That standard is so exactly. A lot of people are very nervous about, like, should we start bhog offering or not, offering a cooked food, right? Even a lot of Ramakrishna missions, most centers offer every day Sri Ramakrishna's worship with fruit, sweets, and nuts like that, and only on like Ramakrishna's birthday, Holy Mother's birthday, Vivekananda's birthday is cooked food done. And for that required, because the ritual standard is very high, they have to clean the kitchen. You know, I know in Berkeley, for Ramakrishna's, before the we had 4 big pujas in Berkeley, Thakur Ma Swamiji and Durga Puja. These are the 4 main pujas. And a week beforehand starts, literally the ceiling of the kitchen is cleaned, right? And everything is cleaned down, the the tables are turned over, the bottom of the kitchen tables, everything is clean. Everything's taken out of the drawers and clean in order to cook for Tucker's food. The standard of Tucker's, the standard is so high for cook food, basically just cooking kitchery. Very strict thing. So people are very nervous about it. But some of the older centers, the ones that were established by disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, or the centers that have, you know, a Murti of Sri Ramakrishna, these older or established opulent centers, certain or successful centers, some of them will often cook food every day. But it's actually uncommon. Like Belarmat, cooked food is offered every day, but most temples are not. There's a reason for that. But so the way we do it with sweets or with larger food, cooked food offering. You've seen actually we get bog and then everybody brings. You see all the people bringing the plates. Usually covered. The plates are brought if they're being brought through a crowd. They're usually covered. People shouldn't see the food. The first person to see the food should be the cook has to see the food, right? But the cook has to cook the food and see the food without thinking, oh, that looks really tasty. Right, you shouldn't be enjoying, or, oh, that smells so good, right? Because that's like you can't offer somebody something you've eaten already. And so we don't just eat with our tongue; we eat with our eyes, with our attention. I remember looking at the Charakrishna temple. It was funny, you know. It's like we're making some food like that, and we're all like everybody's in the kitchen. Oh, this is so good! How do like it? And then we're like, well, I hope Krishna likes it too. Like, because we've all already enjoyed it. You know, even thinking about it, we've already polluted the certain thing. I hope he likes it too. You know, he's tolerant and we'll allow it. But the standards are very strict. So when it's cooked, nobody should see the food when it's cooking and being prepared. And then when it's brought, it should be, especially cooked food should be covered. Sweets and nuts are not so important, but cooked food should not be seen. And you see then when during big pujas we actually cover either we used to have big curtains we could close it or the temple doors in Dakshineshwar the temple doors are closed and locked and the priest he does all the often the priest comes outside and sits outside the door and chants japa when Ma eats and then he knocks again opens the door and the special arati is done right then not even but if they're in the room or if like then at least the eyes you don't see you do your work and then you close your eyes when Ma eats. Right, so that nobody should see. And then when the door is open or the curtain's moved or the cloth is removed, then everybody can see, oh, the prasada. Then it's okay to see. And they go, oh, look how beautiful, how gorgeous, how tasty it looks, you know, type of stuff. But I remember very sweet, we had the big, big curtains that closed back in a little different design? So we had closed the curtains, right, for an Amavasya. And I was out there and we had 100 plates and I was putting flower petals on each plate like that and doing the rituals for the food offering. And then from behind over here, the curtains opened up, and little Arjun, at that time he was like 6, he goes, like, you know, like all these chocolates and sweets like that. But I think Ma ate through him, you know, that sometimes that was in spite of our strict curtain etiquette protocol. I have a feeling that was a lot of fun. But anyways, we're trying to be careful with these things. So the food's brought up, covered, and if people in the room, especially it's cooked food, then a curtain or a cloth is so nobody can see the food while the Lord is eating, while Ma's eating. And so then the process we do, I'll just go through it. It's a simple thing. We, just like we did with the koshkushi and the asana, and we draw like that yantra, that simple yantra of a triangle, circle, and a square, right? We've talked about what that is. It's also Kundalini. It's a whole world. It's the whole universe. So that's drawn, and then a flower is offered to that yantra. Adigana pushpe om hrim adhara shaktiari bhyo namaha. We worship the shaktis, the beginning with adhara shakti, sustaining, holding up power. And I think we mentioned it, but we went through that, I think, in our second talk. It's been a long 2 years ago, I think, or a year ago, or 2 years ago. So those shaktiadi bhyo, all those shaktis, what are those shaktis? There are unlimited shaktis that hold up, but some of them are mentioned. There's prithvi, the earth. There's bhudevi. There's pakriti, right? Mother, nature itself. There's kurma, the tortoise that holds up, in case you're wondering. The earth is held up by a giant tortoise. All the way down. Right, the tortoise that holds up the earth. There's Ananta, the snake the thousand petal snake that holds everything up, right? So it's all these different shaktis that are invoked. We worship them all together, all the sustaining shaktis, right? Which, but also, in to go back to 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, our talks, that yantra is that the square that we draw is the Muladhara chakra at the base of the spine. And the triangle is the pit of kundalini, the pit the fire pit of consciousness, the very base of our... Visualize in tantra and yoga as like the base of the spine, not just our mental game, right? That was passed down to us, right? It's like the very core, center, or ground, foundation of our being, right? Visualize at the base of the spine. That's the power. So that's when we're drawing that yantra, what we're really worshiping, we're really establishing is this body itself or this universe itself at the same time. So we draw that yantra, offer a flower, worship that power, the sustaining power behind everything. Then we put the plate, the main tray, the main plate gets put onto that yantra. Other things are considered extensions of it, right? Sometimes there's many plates and baskets and things like that. Right, and then we purify the food and water by putting flower petals or holy leaves. If it's you're doing Vishnu puja, it requires, especially with cooked food again, it requires tulsi. Tulsi leaves purify everything. If you don't have tulsi leaves, it requires a lot of purification mantras, right? So but for Devi, tulsi is used in different ways, but usually we use flower petals for that. As sanctified, purified flower petals, everything gets, every dish, every item gets covered in a flower petal or leaf on it, right? And then according to how cooked the food is, you know, like whether it's grains and like that, the grains require an extra level of purification. And we talked about the why grains hold vibration. We mentioned yogis. I think I mentioned, but I never developed it. As I always do, I lose my train of thought and I went to a different point. That yogis are careful about grains. We started to talk about that, right? And like in generally temples, we're not strict. People bring rice and we offer it mama. It's up to her. She can see through the rice. She can eat it if she likes it. I offer people's devotion, and they work so hard. We assuming they clean their kitchen. They didn't taste the food. They're using pots that didn't have meat in them. Who knows? Most people we know. They know our standards. And most of these, you know, South Indian Brahmin Hindu wives, you know, they know the standards, right, of a temple. But who knows? You know, it's not. Did a dog look at it? Do they have a cat in the house? You know, who knows? All these, the old standards can't be followed, you know. But anyways, when everything comes with Ma, you look, if you want to eat it, you eat it. But if nothing else, you please accept her devotion. That's our thing. But when we cook very strictly. We bathe, kitchen's clean, and all the, especially with grains, because the consciousness goes into grains. Grains hold. I think we started talking about the kalasham, mm-hmm. about the pots on top of the temple that are full of grains that hold the tensional vibration. That's what started the conversation. But I've seen many yogis, many devotees, when they have to go out and eat outside, right? Then what they'll do, they'll eat something, you know, they order the best they can, and when we go out, sometimes we go out. Sometimes we have to go out, and we have to eat outside. Sometimes also we kind of like to go out, that's our problem. Mm-hmm. You know, Sri Ramakrishna didn't like people eating out. He said, cook your own food and eat it. That was Sri Ramakrishna's simple rule. He didn't like, especially in restaurants, things like that. He didn't like that food is impure. Right? Cook your own food and eat it, or beg it. Begged food's always. He said, food that's got by begging, by bhiksha, is always pure. That's always pure, he said. And also, food cooked by devotees is also pure. So if a devotee cooks your food, that's pure. But restaurants, not always devotees in restaurants, you know. But anyways, so I know some people that what they do, they'll order food. They have to eat like that, but they won't order rice. They avoid grains, right? Because the rice will hold the vibration of the cook and all the stages. And that one may affect the other food. Will have it doesn't hold the same vibration, because in kind of the yogic sensitivity, you know, what we call the vibrational hygiene, right? We kind of think like this, right? There's a more concern about who cooks your food than what your food is. Right, and you can see, I mean, we're vegetarian, we encourage people to be vegetarian, of course, right? But, you know, it's like, you can have a pure, clean vegetarian dish that's not clean and not pure. get sold to you, and the person didn't like you and they could for it. It's all a business transaction, and you guys like, you know, and then like your mom, your grandmother can make you, you know, not to visit, but you know, make you some like meatball spaghetti or something that's full of love. The ingredient's not pure. I'm not justifying it, but this is just an example. You can taste the love in it, though. You can see the love in it, right? You know, maybe not so not justifying, not encouraging you to eat meatball spaghetti. But that's the thing. But the person who cooks it is almost more, the consciousness of the person cooking it is very, very important. So we try to be careful. And then another, we were thinking the other day, Abbot George, we brought him up a few times in the last couple of days. They like to go out also, but they're also really concerned about vibration and food. They know the rules, right? And the standards, right? So they had the thing that they had a container of salt, that blessed salt, right? That they had done proper, you know, as bishops and priests, they could do that, you know? And then when they go out, they when the restaurant, every dish gets sprinkled with the salt. They said salt will break. Like, you can use salt to purify things, you know, purify crystals. You know, we use it this way. It's a purifying substance. By blessed salt. And for a long time, I did that. We kept one of the things we had in our bag here, sorry, was a little container, a little om thing with some blessed salt in it that we had offered to Ma, you know. And maybe it's nothing. But maybe Sri Ramakrishna said purity is in the mind, impurity is in the mind, ultimately, right? And so by doing this, you think it's pure. And if you think it's pure, it's pure. That could be that also. Maybe the blessed salt has a power and breaks the connections. But this is about eating in restaurants. But here we do extra things to purify. The reason I'm bringing this up is because all these mantras to purify, lots of sprinkling and chanting and hums and puts, especially in mudras to purify rice. Right, we start Om Am Hum Pat Swaha. This is the first mantra. Om Am Hum Pat Swaha. We mentioned that Om Am Hum Pat Swaha a year ago. Om Hum Pat Swaha, a way of purifying. We use it when we do it as a total consecration of this of our body, of our mind, of our words. You know, the she's. So similarly, the same thing is done to the food, because the food also has external. Has different bodies also. So it's like we have five bodies. Let's say what we eat also has five bodies. The food we offer also has these five bodies. They're all purified. We're sprinkling again and again. Om Am Hum Pat Swaha. Right. And then last week we also mentioned that we offer water to wash our feet and to rinse our mouth before and after food. Remember, we're supposed to wash our hands before and after eating, wash our mouth. So that's what it's also done again. So we offer her, we wash our feet at the podium. Om Kring Suma Takshana Kaligaya Devi Namaha. Sorry, and Achamani Om Washer Mouth. Om Achamani Orakam. Om Kring Suma Takshana Kaligaya Devi Namaha. And then again, we sprinkle her food. We continue to purify her food. Om Vam Ittasmai Supakarana Navidyaya Namaha. Right, this is for uncooked food. And then for cooked food, it's slightly different. Om Vam Ittasmai Supakarana Anaya Namaha, means with rice. Rice and other dishes. Right, yeah. And then the whole series of mudras we did, we talked about Hung, Yang, Rang, Pashat, Vau, Shat, Vang, Hring, all these mudras we have talked about already. Kring, 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 these cool mudras. Everything is prepared. Usually this is not done for every item, but for food it should always be done. Especially cooked food. And then, so all that's just to purify the food, right? Now, it's actually offered, right? With another mantra, idam maha, and it's sprinkled with a mantra, om idam maha naividyam, this great offering of, this great food offering, right? Or om maha, and then here we do, we combine, ma, we think ma eats with Shiva. They're not separate. We worship them separately and fed them separately, but now they'll eat together off the same plate, right? So, because they're one being. Maha, there says, Mahakala Bhairava Sahita. Sahita means with. So, with Mahakala Bhairava. Right? So, we worship, we're going to say Ma's mantra, but she's eating with Mahakala. Right? Together with, right? Ida Maha Naivedyam O Mahakala Bhairava Sahitaya Om Hrim Krim Sima Dakshina Kalikaya Devye Namaha. Right? We worship the divine Dakshina Kali. Along with Mahakala Bhairava Sahita. Nin om amritam maha navediyami navediyam navediyami namaha. Means with this nectar, how do I translate it? We worship the nectar-like great offering of food, right? And we do, and then we use this denu mudra. We've talked about this, turns everything to nectar. This is the nectar-making mudra, right? So what we're really offering is nectar, right? We're also like infusing it with nectar to purify it, or we're also transforming it to nectar, because Ma doesn't need rice. Right, she. I mean, so obviously, I think she needed pineapples. Mom, right? 7 pineapples, I think. Pineapples. It was an interesting thing. Somebody came, bags of pineapples. That was Mom's offering. He said, Mom wanted pomegranates, but they're out of season, so she brought pineapples. Sounds, I think, similar. But so Mom, I take it back. Mom wants pineapples, but what Mom wants is amrita. And so where is the amrita? Remember when we did the dhyan, when we did the manasa puja, the internal meditation on Kali, the internal worship of Kali, right? We went the water, we washed her feet, we rinsed her mouth, we bathed her. With which water? Anybody remember? You know, is it from the water dripping from the thousand petal? Right? From the union of Shiva and Shakti, there's amrita always dripping. This is the water that we really, although we're bathing her externally, this is the water we're bathing her with, right? So similarly, what we're offering her is not rice and sabji and pakoras and all those wonderful things, right? Pizza, whatever we're giving her. We're offering amrita, right? So really what we're offering, these are all very internal. We're doing it externally, but these are external. They have a correspondence with very deep things, right? The Devi we're worshiping internally, we've already awoken her within. If we've done the puja correctly. And so the external offering is an internal offering. And like during the Chandi talk, we mentioned this is a really far out little detail, that tantric yogis, you're all tantric yogis, only a few of them have long enough hair to do this. But when you do sadhana, I used to have long enough hair to do this, just a few. But when you do sadhana, you're supposed to tie your hair, right? Your hair tied up is a sign of your intention, right? Actually, you never do puja. There's very few mantras of puja you do with your hair down in traditional. So you tie your hair and that shows your resolve, right? You're pulling everything up and so similarly, if you don't have hair, like Atmaram, you only have a sika, you also tie the sika. You don't do, so your sika gets, you shouldn't be, puja shouldn't be done as an untied sika, right? So you sit down, you chant them, there's certain mantras to tie the sika, right? So there's mantras for tying, taking that resolve. So the mantra that these tantric yogis would do, when they tie their hair, they go, Om Namas Chandikaya, and they tie their hair. Why? Chandika is a very fierce goddess, form of Kali, right? Chandika means she who rips apart, right? You know, so, and she's being placed on the brain, your head, the mind gets, she rips apart the mind, and you're thinking like that. But it's a deeper thing. Chandika, right, it's like, I'm not telling you to go get, have spaghetti at grandmother's with meatballs. I'm also not telling you to offer meat to, animal sacrifice to Kali. But in ancient times, Kali's was a meat eating, she's offered, Chandika especially is offered animal sacrifice. Internally by yogis, externally and by others, right? But what is that meat that we offer her? We put her here, this body is her food. So she rips apart the mind and eats body consciousness, right? So this is the Chandika. So anyway, so what are we feeding her? We're feeding her the amrita from within. We're feeding her our body consciousness. The whole thing is a transformative meditation, but it's done so simply and devotionally, right? Because it has so much meaning. We've only given a fraction of some level of meaning, and actually only a fraction of the possible meaning of every aspect of the puja, right? Including the offerings, right? But it's more than sufficient, because when we're doing the puja, we don't think of any of this stuff. We sit here talking, we can keep talking about this stuff, right, for months more, right? But it's actually so simple. It's like, Ma, look, the devotee has brought you some sweets, please eat. Oh, Ma looks hungry, somebody brought her pineapples. Right, so it's such a simple act, but it's a profound on so many levels. Super profound. So there's other, you can keep doing more and more purification mantras. There's one mantra which I don't have the proper translation of, but it's a mantra that says, invoking this Denumudra, I'm turning you into nectar, invoking nectar into you, with different mantra. Om Kleen Kamadugya Moge Varadavichis Puris Purushim Parashimiti Kamadenu Vidraya Denu Mudraya Amritikrita Om Burvaswa, and it goes, Gayatri Mantra is chanted and different things like that to transform like that. So then how do we eat? How does Ma eat? It's all about Amrita. The food's been transformed into Amrita, and it's also going to be given on a plate of Amrita with a covering of Amrita. Right, so we have to give the bottom plate. The real plate is also Amrita. So, and we do this by taking a little water in our hand, and we did this once before called Goyoni Mudra, where we did to purify the earth. We took water in this mudra and we let it drop. Goyoni means it's the urine of a cow. So it's cow purifies every year. The cow urine purifies everything. So we offer. Oops, I know I got ahead of time. We do grasa mudra. This is a grasa mudra. We take om amrito pastramasi swaha. May this, meaning nectar or water, be a bed of nectar. So we do it and we pour it on the ground near the food or in the baking bowl, on the offering bowl like that. Right. That's so we're before feeding her. We're not just a little silver plate or a little metal plate with food. We're doing something deeper than this, right? A bed of nectar, and then we offer the five pranas, because when we eat, our pranas eat our food, right? When Ma eats, her pranas eat her food, but her pranas are cosmic pranas. We have individual manifestations of these pranas, right? You know, maybe the prana, apana, vyana, udana, samyam, samana. Like we will go into another series. We'll talk about what the five pranas are. There's upward moving, downward moving, digesting, rotating. There's different things. There's actually many, many more pranas, but five. There's only one prana. Prana is named by its different functions. Okay, are named by its functions. So how it works in the body. So this is at the Ma's cosmic body. So we make a bed of nectar, and then we put some water, and then we're offering her the pranas for to digest her food. These are cosmic pranas, though. And they're done with the mantra invoking the prana, as well as the mudra that invokes the prana. Each movement of the prana has a mudra. Om pranaya swaha. This is the prana mudra. Apanaya swaha. Vyanaya swaha. Udanaya swaha. Samanaya swaha. These are the five mudras. And you'll see sometimes it's like, you can get very dramatic. You get Om Pranayas, Om Apanayas, Swaha. This way of offering is dramatically and as performative. You know, as some people just do the mantras, or you can actually do it very beautifully. You've seen it very beautiful. If you ever see video of the Bhashma Arati in Mahakaleshwara Temple, right in Ujjain, it's incredible. Look it up on YouTube. Bhashma Arati. They bathe him at 4 in the morning with ash from the recent cremation the night before, you know, really quite something. But the puja is done spectacularly, right? The pujaris are extremely gifted, right? And so expressive and devotional. And when they feed, when they bring his food in, and the way they off, you know, they each prana is taken and brought to his mouth. You know, each item is, the essence of the item is brought, the pranas, each item was different mantra. And you can see him like being like the priest, even though he's not touching anything. He's like, but you can see him like hand feeding. And you see it. I mean, if you just look it up, you can look, it's so beautiful. At the Mahakaleshwara Temple, Mahakaleshwara Temple in Ujjain. Om Pranayas, Om Pranayas, like that. And Om Brahmane Swaha. So, with that, we've given her a plate of nectar. We've then offered her the five pranas, and now she can eat. So while she's eating, you close your eyes and you chant. Because she's eating, you know, we devotionally we think, oh, we don't want to interrupt her, we'll chant, do a japa while Ma eats. right? Internally, our mantra is what we're feeding her. We're feeding her our attention, we're feeding her our devotion, we're feeding her, you know, our chitta, everything. By purifying it, we chant appropriate mantra, whatever the mantra is being used, right? When the appropriate time, 108 mantras, whatever the period of time is done, then I mentioned we give the offering with a plate of nectar and covering of nectar. Now we do the covering of nectar. We do the Goyoni Mudra. Om Krim Amritapi Dhanamasi Swaha. May this water or nectar be a covering of nectar. So now you've gummed the whole thing, right? And then we offer. Then we also give her a glass of water. Sometimes the water is offered along with the food. Idam panar todakam. This is drinking water. Om Mahakala Bhairava Sahita. Om Kring Sima Takshana Kalagai Devierma Madhya Madhya Amritam Paniyam Samarpayami. We offer this water. So Ma's eaten and drank, and now again we wash her feet and rinse her mouth. Etapadyam Om Kring Kring Sima Takshana Kalagai Devierma Idam Punar Achamani Odakam. The second washing of the mouth, we rinse her mouth again. So that's actually pretty much the she gets the 16 item and with food, and then there's a few other mantras. Who wrote the what's his name, the Agora book, that Ayurvedic doctor Svoboda, in one article he knows a lot about pujas and stuff like that. He mentioned that all this stuff you're building. It's getting heat. You're building a huge fire, right? You need to cool down, right? So the puja isn't like, okay, get up. You know, it's like there's other things to kind of, you have to bring everything back down again. You have to cool it back down again. So there's other offerings that are done, and japas offered, and it's maybe sometimes on second decoration of garlands that can be offered. So here we also offer. There's three or four other flowers that are offered. One is a flower representing everything else. Like we've offered, you know, 16 items and food and all this stuff, nectar and our body consciousness and our brain, the whole thing, everything. Hopefully Ma's eaten everything. But what if there's something else she wants? Actually, we want not something else she wants, everything else. We want to offer everything. And the word for everything is sarvam, right? So idam sarvam. With this offering of everything. Everything else or everything. Both we offer a flower or handfuls of flowers can be offered again, but usually that's is offered. Then there's Pushpanjali Patanjali. This is the offering. Like after big puja we do Pushpanjali, we all chant the mantra and we offer leaves and flowers, right? So that's done as this part of the puja. The pujari can also do it. Idam sachandana pushpabila patram pushpanjali om ring kima takshana kalagaya devya nama. With these flowers, beaver leaves and flower petals touched with sandal paste, we worship. And it can be offered handful after handful. We do it as a group, but the pujari does it by himself first or herself. And then Ma's anga devatas and avarana devatas. So anga means limbs. Right, so it could be literally her limbs, right? You know, like her various limbs of her body are worshipped, right? But also her limbs are also her other aspects or associated deities and things like that. You know, the anga, her different shaktis, like for instance, like the Dash Mahavijas and the Ashtamatrikas and the directional deities. All those could also be her anga devatas. Etaganda pushpe. Om Kring Sima Dakshina Kalikaya Anga Devata Bhyo Namaha. We worship the limbs or the auxiliary deities, both meanings are there, of Dakshina Kali. Then her Ma also has attendants, right? She has attendant deities. Etaganda Pushpe Om Kring Sima Dakshina Kalikaya Avarana Devata Bhyo Namaha. Her attendant deities, her Varana Devatas. And her Varana Devatas should not be neglected. Right, because they are, if you ever seen post paintings of Kali, some of the old classical paintings of Ma, right? She has Dakinis and Yoginis and these fierce Shaktis, right? And when she's there, we're focusing on her, and we're not focusing on them, you know. And so we can ignore them. but they're there, and so they should be given their due. Actually, when Yogi came, we forget these because we simply worship Ma with affection. We're not thinking of all these. We don't always think of. We don't think too tantrically and about spirits and deities, and that's not our not the way we conceptualize. But he said, "Oh no, you have to worship the Anga Devata, the Avarana Devatas, and give them an asana. Where you have to give them an asana, like at the base of a peepal tree or something like that. You know, otherwise these are wild Shaktis. Wild Shaktis have wild behavior, right? And so you need to give them. So there's yantras and seats and pujas and like that. They should also be given a plate, minimally a flower, right? The Anga Dev, Avarana Devata, then." This is a very nice. This lists like everybody else, right? Om Sangaye, right? Sangha means. So at the end of the mantra, I'm going to give the mantra in backwards first, right? It says, "Dakshina Kali Kaye Devye Namaha." We worship Dakshina Kali. Sangaye, right? Along with, right? So Sangaye means along with. Savarnaye, along with her attendants, her associates, sayudaye, her associates, her attendants, her sayudaye, her army, right? Ma has armies, right? Her army gets worshipped. Her army. Savahanaye, no, saparivaraye, parivar, her family. That means, so her army, her attendants, her associates, her army, her family. Who's her family? Ganesha, Kartikeya, Shiva, the whole family, right? Her sisters, Saraswati, Lakshmi, whatever you want to think of it, right? Savahana, her vahana, vahana is a vehicle. Who's Kali's vehicle? Of course, we have here, usually see Devi rides a lion, Shimhavaini, or a tiger, right? We have a liger. It's a striped tiger. It's a hybrid. Ma drives a hybrid. It's a modern girl. Right? But actually, this Savahanaye, her attendants, her all of them have vehicles. Her army, her family. So it's not just the lion. It's also the peacock, the swan, the mouse, the eagle. All the different vahanas are also invoked, and during this part of the puja. So vahanaye, Sri Mahakala Bhairava Sahitaye, and Mahakala Bhairava, her husband, her consort. Om Kringsima Dakshina Kaligaya Devi Nama. Sri Parukam Pujiyami Tarpayami Namaha. With worshipping all of them, the full picture. Ma with Shiva, her family, her army, her vehicles, the full thing. We're worshipping, we're offering flowers and water at all their feet. We're worshipping everybody. It's a very complete thing. I have 1 minute. Then another offering is japa. Right, because of course japa is the main. Actually, japa is really the main. Actually, our japa tradition is that puja is done after diksha. Right, that it says in the mantra, the Shankaracharya has a mantra that says, being initiated into one mantra, one has the right to chant all mantras. That doesn't mean that you just now go Google it and just chant mantras. Meaning, but the diksha into one particular mantra, now you have diksha. Right, that changes something. Right, awakens that mantra, but also changing something in your body and your consciousness. Holy Mother said like that. The body becomes pure in a certain way. Now, the puja takes life. All the other mantras become living because of your japa. Your japa of your mantra is the heart and soul of all the mantras. Right? So that's really the main offering. And actually, we've taken months and months and months to go through the puja, or it takes an hour or 3 hours to go through to perform the puja, right? Or you can just, if you have the mind consciousness, if you chant your mantra, it's all there. All these mantras are there, Right? Every mantra is there. Every ritual, every philosophy, everything, the full thing is there in every repetition of the mantra. But we don't see it. And we also like to bring all these things out. There's joy in it also. But the main offering really is a mantra. And by chanting our one mantra, we're offering all the mantras. So all the things we've chanted, all the mantras we've done, all these mantras we've chanted, the hymn will say that I've chanted in secret. Right. So actually, these mantras we've chanted out loud, but the Ishta mantra or the Diksha mantra we've chanted in secret. So all these mantras are the external forms of the Ishta mantra or the Diksha mantra. So we chant, we hold a little water, and we chant the mantra 10 times, 20 times, something like that. Right, and then usually we offer it to Ma's left hand. Right, we kind of think it's offered this way. Om Guyati Guyagopri Tvam Griha Nasmat Kritam Japam Siddhir Bhavatu Me Devi Tat Prasadan Maheshwari. If it's a male D, Tat Prasadan Maheshwara, the same mantra there. Guyati Guyagopri Tvam. O secret of secrets. You are the most secret. Ma is the most secret. She's sitting here, but she's the most secret. She's the most hidden, actually. Oh, secret of secrets and keeper of all secrets. Right? Please accept the mantras we have chanted in secret. That's a beautiful thing, right? So the mantra, you are the most secret, you're the keeper of secrets, and the mantras I have chanted also in secret, you please accept these mantras. O Supreme Goddess, and mercifully allow us to attain Siddhi, perfection. Which means the Siddhi of the mantra, the purpose of the puja, or just our own spiritual goal. May the purpose of this puja be satisfied. You please accept the mantras I've chanted, secretly as well as out loud. Right? And please accept. So I think there's a few, the final part of the puja is the pranam mantra and the salutation mantras for Kali, but those are so beautiful, they require their own, I think. It says that the entire philosophy of Shaktism is included in these three Sarva Mangala Mangalye verses, right? So they require at least a little bit more discussion than, I'm ready, 3 minutes, or than the negative 3 minutes, so we won't go into it. Won't go into it. And then the final thing is that the asking forgiveness for any mistakes, that's always done. I have to, even after our talks, we ask forgiveness for the mistakes. From you and from Ma. And then RIT. We can talk about RIT and a few other things. And I think next week we can close. Yeah, like we slowly comment it out. We can close it all up. Pack it all up tomorrow. I mean next week. And then, I don't know, what are we going to talk about after this? It's been a long journey. Probably we'll go back to the Kali Sasanama and Bhagavatam. We were doing that. We took a break years ago. We haven't picked it up. I looked on our podcast, like 2017 or something was the last talk on it was a little, it's been a long break, but sometimes we get inspired and the way it goes. Any questions or comments? Hopefully not, because it's RIT time. And so thank you very much for your kind attention, and it's been a wonderful adventure. I got it.